Hi, my name is Andy Kravitz, and I am a reporter for the Peoria Journal Star. We are here today to talk about missing persons in the city of Peoria. I have two folks here, ma'am. You are
April Scott,
and.
Michael Boland of Peoria Police Department, Criminal Investigations Division.
All right. So we are here, and if folks want to join in, they can try to send us comments, and if we can learn how to get them, I'll try, but I don't know. So we are here, and the first thing I would like to talk about is that we're going to talk to Miss Scott. Her daughter Alexis has been missing since last fall, and Mike Boland here has been working the case. So we're going to start out talking a bit about that. Mike, could you maybe just sum up the case in a few minutes on what you know, please?
Sure. Essentially, Alexis Scott became a missing person around the end of September of 2017. She was last seen on Richmond Street. She had apparently been there at a party of some of her acquaintances. And at some point during the early morning hours, between, say, 5 a.m. and 8 a.m. in the morning, she disappeared. And we have tried to find out where she went and the circumstances around her disappearance ever since then.
I do know that there's been many theories and stuff like that, and I do know that you guys are working the case. You probably don't want to delve too much into some of the stuff that you have found out, but just on a general sense, what have you learned, and what have you ruled out?
Certainly her disappearance is suspicious, and it's troubling. You know, she had a young child. She had never really ran off before in these circumstances. Nobody wants to give us a real good account of where she went and how she became missing. The key people involved in it all have poor backgrounds, if you will. That lead us to think that it's more of a suspicious case than anything else. Generally, if someone purposely leaves, somebody has contact with them, a family member, a friend, a law enforcement agency, and in this case, that hasn't happened.
She is 20, right? She is still 20, or is she 21 now?
Yeah, she just turned 21.
She just turned 21, and she's a young woman, and I believe that she has a son who is 2, right? Okay. Ma'am, just folks, this is very, very hard, because this is real. This is not fake. This is real, and this is her daughter. Is there anything else, Miss Scott, that you would like to add from what Mike said?
No, he's telling you the truth. We do not know where she is. We haven't heard from her.
What?
We don't know where she is, and we have not heard from her.
And, you know, that's very, you know, strange, because she was on social media, mm-hmm, a bunch, you know, being 20 at the time. Kids now live on their phones. Could you maybe tell me a bit about your daughter?
Well, she's a mom. She was 20 at the time. She, very happy child. She went through some dark days prior to her coming up missing. I found out after she came up missing this time. And I have no idea why she would be gone now, or why anybody would want to hurt her or take her away.
As far as, you know, one of the things that I found in doing research on these type of stories is the human toll, the stress, both for cops who put in long days working cases, and for family members who are living through probably the worst thing you could ever live through. Could you maybe one or both of you talk a bit about that stress and talk a bit about, you know, how this has affected you guys?
Well, from the law enforcement side of it, you know, we try to empathize with the families as much as we can. We understand that it's very taxing on them, and we put in as much effort as we can to try to locate the people. However, you know, we do get hindered sometimes by, you know, not being able to, put it this way, we have to follow the rules, we have to follow the Constitution, we have to follow the laws. We also have to maintain some level of impartiality. We have to let the case take us where the case takes us based on the facts and circumstances that we develop during that investigation. To give an example, you know, we will get reports from people on social media, and they will report to us that this happened, and they heard this, and they heard this. And it's our job to go back and track that backwards. We don't always like what we hear, and that we may get information that a certain person did something. And so we want to track that person down, obviously, but we have to do it the right way, the proper way. And there's a way about going about it as opposed to just rushing out, grabbing this person, putting him in handcuffs, drag him down to the station, and then trying to get them to confess to something. Because if we do that, then that negates our ability to prosecute a case, and we lose evidence, we lose confessions, and it really doesn't help in the criminal justice system at all if we do that. There's a lot of outrage in the world today about wrongful convictions and putting words in people's mouths and essentially coercing people into confessions. Well, we want to guard against that, so we let the case take us where the case takes us, and we follow up on all the leads that we can follow up on, and we run it out till the end. And if we're able to secure a conviction out of that process, that's probably the best outcome. In this case, we certainly want to find Alexis, and we certainly want to bring April and her family some peace, you know. But it's hard for us to, we just have to keep that barrier. We empathize with the family. Like I said, we understand, we're not in their shoes, but we understand what they're talking about and where they're going, and we want to help them as much as we can. We just want to do it the right way.
You know, if you mentioned that you want to maintain that barrier, but at the same time, I've seen you go on some of the searches that have been on the Facebook page, and we shall talk about that a bit later. And I've seen you go to various things. I know that, I think with Matt Rogers, I think, went to a thing last week for her birthday. I understand that you, but it's still, I get that you have to maintain that wall, but doesn't there become a time when it does become a difficult thing where you, I mean, you get to sort of know a person.
You're right about that. We're trying to stay involved in it as much as we can, because we're only as good as the information that we receive. And the information that we've read from April, her family and friends, and the people on the Alexis Scott Camry page, Facebook page, it's been invaluable to us, because we wouldn't have gotten that information otherwise. I mean, there are some people out there that are putting in significant time on their own, searching social media sites, Facebook, I don't know, whatever else social media there is out there. And they were, I mean, I'm not in that group of people, but they have really brought us a lot of information and a lot of good leads. And I mean, I think if I could make an arrest based on information on that, I think we're in the right direction with the information that we get from those people. Unfortunately, the information has to have some kind of substance to it. There has to be some kind of proof behind it. And, you know, I'm telling you, in this case, I found out that there's a lot of bad folks in this city. And, you know, obviously I can't name names and I'm not going to, but there are some bad people out here. And I think that Alexis got caught up in being around the bad in the wrong time and being in the wrong place. I certainly hope that, you know, we're wrong about what's going on here, and I certainly hope that she's out there alive and well somewhere.
And she could be. There is no evidence whatsoever.
Right. There is that. It's just one of those things from an investigative point of view. The longer the time goes out, and you know, when you look back, you know, one of the things that you do in the initial phase of any investigation, homicide, missing person, whatever, you're investigating the person that's missing or hurt or killed. You have to start there because that's your starting point. Then once you find out who their friends, family, and all this stuff is, their enemies, then you can branch out from there. You're right that there isn't any solid evidence to support one way or the other. We hope that she's alive and well somewhere. I'm skeptical only because I think that she has enough sense and has enough street savvy that she would be able to reach out to us if she was out there somewhere.
You know, that's not, ma'am, what any mother wants to hear. And I am struck, and it's not a bad thing. I'm just struck at how clinical Mike can talk about this. He's basically saying the worst, but he doesn't mean anything bad by it. It's just his job. How are you holding up through all this? I do know, I believe that you are helping to care for and raise her son, right?
Yes.
How are you holding up, and what are you doing, ma'am, to try to cope with this? And I ask that because a missing person's case affects not just the person who is missing, but everybody else. It's one of those crimes that branches out into a broad view. So the question is, how are you holding up?
Well, to answer that, I've heard all the theories. They get worse. Every one I hear, some are good, some are bad, but most of them are bad. And I don't accept them. The way I'm able to keep going is I don't dwell on it. I don't dwell on the negative possibilities. I'm very much aware that there could be, you know, that she no longer here. But I don't accept it because in order to accept it, then I couldn't move. I would be paralyzed. In my everyday efforts to take care of myself and my family and do things I need to do to maintain a normal life. I'm very disappointed that those who are possibly involved or know what happened have gone so long, for so many years, without being reprimanded. I feel like if these people were not around during the time that she was growing up and they had been taken care of years ago, the problems that they have caused in the community and the things that they have done and been involved in had been addressed a long time ago. She couldn't run into them. She wouldn't have been there because they wouldn't have been there. And sometimes we look the other way and we wait for the bigger thing and the bigger thing that they do, or for the big takedown of people. And sometimes if you can get them before that happens, you save a lot of people along the way. Working with children and adults, I find that the sooner you address the problem, the more likelihood you have of solving an issue before it becomes an issue. and that's where we are today. As far as my family is concerned, I tell our son that mommy's gone, she'll be back. I tell my son the same thing. I tell my relatives the same thing. And I need a positive support system around me, and that's what I have. And anything other than that, I don't include in myself.
I am going to talk to Mike about how you start this. You briefly touched on it. But as far as you, what efforts have you taken on your own? I know, and we had mentioned a Facebook page. If you do a search, it's the Alexis Camry Scott campaign is one of them. I believe that there are others out there, but that is it. But that is the
probably
main
right.
one.
Yeah, it's
and there's others out there, and there's posts on there every day. So if you care about this case, please find that page, click the button to search it or to do whatever. And if you happen to know stuff, you know, try to reach folks. But what have you done, ma'am, on your own without the police to try to do a search? Because I know that you yourself have done a lot of things.
Well, I tried to dig into what happened, dig into her friends. I really, a lot of her friends I didn't know, basically because she had grown up, you know, and they keep a lot of things from you as they grow up. So I have done and am doing a lot of research on her friends, what kind of lifestyles they live, places they go, and just to determine, you know, why this would have happened. It takes a lot of research. A lot of it is internet research. A lot of it is just talking to people to find out, you know, what kind of lifestyle she had, what kind of lifestyle did her friends have, places they went, how often, and connecting with other people on social media who have outlets to other social media outlets to get the word out.
So, Mike, why don't you start it? And we are going to switch gears back to Mike. I'd like to ask, how does one start a case like that? You kind of briefly touched on it. You start looking at the person. Could you maybe go into that? Because this is the worst of the worst. It's almost, you could make a case worse than murder because you just don't know. With it, I mean, as bad as murder is, and it's all awful, at least you know something happened. You know what happened. Here, we don't know. So why don't you walk me through, you know, briefly, how a police officer would go through this?
Well, essentially, it would start with the complaint. Generally, somebody will call the police department, request an officer, and want to make a missing persons report. The officer will arrive there and ask, okay, who's missing? How long have they been missing? Where were they last seen at? What makes you think that their disappearance is suspicious? And a lot of times you'll hear, you know, the constant themes of, well, they've been despondent. They've been on medication for severe depression. Things like that, kind of like they're missing because they wanted to wander off somewhere. And obviously in that circumstance, you would start to think, well, they walked off somewhere, they're trying to commit suicide or something like that. In another case, they may say, I don't know why they left. I just haven't seen them in 3 or 4 days, and they didn't show up to work Monday. And so we're wondering where they're at. But generally what the officer will do is take down the vital information, the person's name, their address, their birthday, height and weight, what they were last seen wearing, where they work at, if you know, where do they bank at, what kind of car they drive, have they had any fights with anybody recently, is there any family troubles that you know of, are there any kids that are abandoned as a result of this. And so the officer, once he gets that initial information, can kind of make an assessment as to what kind of missing person that they have. Is this somebody that's endangered? Is it somebody that just wants to be left alone for a while? Is it somebody that may be suicidal? And at that point, they will start to go back and try to look for these persons, either by going to their house, their job, contacting their friends, so on and so forth. At the patrol level, once they exhaust all of the information that they have at hand, then they'll refer to the Criminal Investigation Division.
Which is?
The Detective Bureau,
okay,
basically.
Once
it's assigned to a detective will review it. They will pick up where the patrol officer left off. They'll start going back and researching that person, like I already stated. They'll go back into their history, find out, you know, is there any kind of criteria in their background that might put them at risk for something? Is there a history, just say, for instance, do they have a boyfriend in Indiana and they just decide to go spend the weekend with their boyfriend in Indiana and didn't tell anybody? But they do that background search. Beyond that, they start looking at bank records. Are they withdrawing money from anywhere? Have they applied for credit anywhere? Have they gotten a new driver's license recently? Have they applied for a loan of some sort? When all of those things come up negative, then we kind of come to a dead end. But in either case, we enter them into the LEAD system and the NCIC system.
And what is LEADS and what is NCIC?
LEADS is the local Illinois law enforcement application data system. And when we enter somebody into that, then any law enforcement agency that runs that person's name or social security number or any of the factors that are listed in that initial report that will trigger a response, they'll get a hit back and it'll say, you know, missing person, Andy Kravitz, missing from Peoria, Illinois, case number 1234. Same thing with NCIC, which is the National Crime Information Center. And the NCIC automatically shifts to people if it's a juvenile, for instance, a missing or exploited kid, it will automatically go to the National Center for Missing and Exploited Kids and it will go to their database. And it'll also be in our terminal so that if a police officer anywhere in the country runs that person, same criteria comes back. It'll say missing person, missing from this location, this date, this time. If you were to intercept a person under those circumstances, then the officer would take a look at that and ask them, Andy, says here that you're missing from Peoria, Illinois. Are you okay? Is there anything wrong with you? Do you need any medication? Have you need, you know, whatever the circumstances are, and you'll give a response and the officer will make a judgment whether you're sane, healthy, and taken care of. And if that's the case, then you have the opportunity as an adult to say, look, I'm not missing. I just don't want to go back to Peoria. And so I started over here in Colorado and that's it. I'm not going back to Peoria. Or you say, well, yeah, I am missing. And, you know, so we would find them shelter and get them relocated back to wherever they came from.
So what is this NAMIS?
NAMIS is another database similar to the Missing and Exploited Child database. The difference is that NAMIS is more of a voluntary thing, that anybody in the community can get onto NAMIS and search for missing persons and add information into that database. It isn't automatically linked like it is with the child one, the missing or exploited children. And essentially, friends, family, whoever can get on there, add information. They can add detailed notes. They can add information about, you know, who they may be associated with or friends that they have. And it's a pretty good tool specifically for families and even law enforcement because you get a chance to look. But other than that, that's what it is. It's a voluntary database for missing persons.
And folks, you can reach that. It is spelled NAMUS, and it's a governmental website. There is a bill pending right now in the state Senate that would make a NAMUS having an officer add a name to that database. It would make it a requirement after 30 days, but that's still pending right now. you are hearing all this stuff. I mean, have you? He said that this Namath was more for the families. Have you used it? Have you seen it? Have you helped to upload it?
All I did was call type my information in on their website, and I haven't added or taken anything away from it.
Because I was on it, and there's a bunch of photos of her, and it basically tells a synopsis of it. You know, there is talk about trying to put more of these things together so that they could use everybody's eyes and ears to help find folks. It almost seems like it is a no-brainer that is a good thing, right? On the other hand, it is a voluntary thing. Should Namath, you think, be a mandatory thing?
I think if there's criteria that indicates there's some kind of foul play afoot, that it should be mandatory, but I don't think if you can prove that you probably ought to put that in there. And the reason I say that is because as adults and people in the free world, sometimes people just want to be left alone. Sometimes they just are tired of one way of living and they turn over a new leaf and want to go another direction. And you take away some of their anonymity and their, so to speak, free rights, their rights as a free person, when you put them in a database, because now everybody's got their information. Everybody knows that they're missing, and they may not want to be found. But I think that's in fewer cases than the other ones. I think most of the missing persons that are in that situation are found or recovered or relocated relatively quickly.
You, Mike, had mentioned that many of the missing persons cases start out with a kid who runs off a young minor, someone who is off their meds, and wanders off. Is that the vast number of missing persons cases within the area? And if so, how quickly are those closed out?
Well, there again, it comes down to what the initial officer develops at the time. Sometimes, when you're speaking about kids running away, it's usually runaways. It's usually, you know, kid was supposed to be home at 4:30. It's 5. He isn't home. I think he's a runaway, or I want to report him missing. And then he'll show up at 6:30, late for dinner, and gets in trouble, and they call the police, say a child came back home. Generally speaking, that's the case in the majority of cases. We have, once the report goes out, the officer will do a report. They'll put out messages through leads and NCIC and in our local, which we call Signal 49s, which is a broadcast to all the officers on duty at the time. And usually that person's found relatively quickly within a few hours, and the report's closed and over with. The ones that, like I said, are troubling are the ones that go beyond a couple days. We experience a lot of times where, you know, Friday night, the wife hasn't showed up. She'd been out drinking with her friends. Saturday came, she's not home. Sunday evening, she shows up. You know, so she's been gone a couple days. But like in Alexis's case, after they're a few days out, that's when we start really starting to get concerned. And that's when we try to turn up the investigation a little bit more, try to get more people involved in it. Start reaching out more, doing the bank records and that type of stuff. Because it seems to us that once they get past that 2 or 3 day mark, then something is wrong. And so it's urgent that we find those people.
And you guys have been to fields in Fulton County. If I remember right, there was searching there. Folks on the Facebook page have been out searching for weeks, days. I mean, they put in a tremendous amount of time.
Yeah, as a police department, I'd really like to commend those people for doing that, because we don't have the manpower, the resources to do it. And these people are all volunteering their time, and they're all concerned citizens for the most part. Some are friends and family, but a lot of them are just concerned citizens. They come out, volunteer their time, and they've covered a lot of ground. They've covered more ground than the police department ever would have covered. If we had to do it every day, we still wouldn't have covered as much ground as they've covered.
And that is just a great thing. And that leads me into one of the things I want to talk about. Social media. You know, there's all these different things now, much like you, Mike. I don't know all the things. There's like Twitter, there's Facebook, but there's also like Reddit, I think, WhatsApp, I don't know. I mean, Adam here is the god at that stuff. I don't know nothing. But I don't. But social media is both a bane and a boon. Bane in the sense that people can get on there and type whatever the heck they want. It could lead you off on a wild goose chase, or it could be a hurtful thing. On the other hand, as you said, it's brought out folks to cover ground to search. It's brought up leads, and it's put the name and the face of Alexis Scott in front of more folks than could have ever been seen. Why don't you talk to me a bit about social media, first from your point of view as a mother, and then from your point of view as a cop, ma'am?
Well, for adults, I think it's a wonderful thing. You know, adults who know how to communicate and share information. For children, not so much. There's bullying. There's sharing of information that probably shouldn't be shared. That should probably remain in their homes. Everything that we do seems like we create that's for the positive, for the good. It always has a downside to it. In this situation, for me, it's good that social media is around, because I would never be able to reach as many people as I've been able to reach or share as much information. For children, unfortunately, it's not the best place to be. A lot of bad things are happening on social media, and there's no way to rein it in at this point. Of course, Facebook and Twitter and Snapchat and Tumblr all have age guidelines for what's acceptable and the age appropriate to be on there. We all know those are not being followed. In that case, I think a tighter rein needs to be done by those who offer the sites. But that probably won't happen, but that is a problem.
You mentioned, ma'am, in this case, the disappearance of your daughter, that it's been good that you've been able to reach more folks. This Facebook page, this group, is huge. There's a lot of folks in it. I mean, we're talking about hundreds of folks that have signed on to it. I'm part of that group because I'm doing stories, and I follow some of the messages. Who have you been? I mean, what has this group been able to give you?
Wow, a lot, and I know that's big. They've been able to tell me, answer questions basically that I have. I have a lot of members who are either been through this situation in some way or another. Connections or connected with those possibly involved in the case. A lot of storylines, a lot of information that I would never have been able to get, not from the police department, not from lawyers out here in Peoria. They can show me a side of this investigation that I probably wouldn't be able to see otherwise.
Could you give a bit of a hint about what you're talking about? I mean, you don't have to go into everything.
Just insight into the type of people that either I work with, or that my daughter was associated with, or people that I thought I knew, probably not as well as, you know, they do. I'm not from the area, so a lot of it I wouldn't know. I didn't grow up here. And whereas a lot of people are from this area, they grew up here, they went to school with each other, and know the community a lot better than I do.
I see. Mike?
From our end, the social media has been overwhelmingly positive. And the reason I say that is because, you know, we've put out Crime Stoppers, and Crime Stoppers has been kind enough to offer up a extended or more of a reward for information. But to be honest with you, I think we've garnered a lot more information from the social media site and using Dusty Moultrie or even Sarah Martin as mouthpieces, because people feel comfortable talking to them versus talking to the police. And they'll share information with them that I don't think they would share with us.
And I just want to stop right there. Those two folks you mentioned run the Facebook groups.
Correct.
Okay. So, you know, you mentioned that you've been able to reach more folks, but we also know that there's a lot of, quote, fake news, which I'm not a big fan of talking about. But has the Facebook group led you down rabbit holes that while you know this probably isn't true, you still have to follow it?
Yeah, we follow up on all leads. I don't think that we've really garnered any information that was so far-fetched that it wasn't worthwhile. I think that at the end of the road, sometimes it leads to a lot of skepticism about what happened. But there again, we have to prove that stuff, and if we can prove it, we can prove it. If we can't, you know, we have to use it for what it is. But going back to Sarah and Dusty, they're able to reach out to people on their own through this web. I mean, there's, like you said, there's tons of people on this website, and maybe they're not really familiar with what exactly happened at that particular point in time when she went missing. But they do know the people that are involved in it, and they may say, hey, I heard this person talking to that person about this, that, and this happening. And even though that information on its face may not be of value that we can use to prosecute the case with, it may give us some direction to go as far as investigation goes. Because at the end of the day, we have to figure out what happened, and at some point we're going to be talking to people more in depth. And it's better for us to have a pretty good idea what happened before we go to talk to them people, because they know what happened, and they'll know if we're bluffing or not. And we don't want to be the ones bluffing. We want to have a couple of aces in our hand to use as leverage during that time.
I do know that there's a lot of tests that are still being processed on this case. There was some evidence found at that field. The tests are not back yet, right?
Correct.
They're still, why does it take so long? That is something that many of us who watch CSI don't seem to get. On CSI, they have a very, very nice office. It has great lighting. The people have staffs bigger than most towns, and they manage to get stuff done in 25 minutes. And you guys don't have that. Right. Why?
Well, ultimately, the protocols lie with the state police and their crime scene forensic labs. But generally speaking, it comes down to priorities. They have to push the cases forward where people are in custody. They have to push forward cases that involve sexual assaults. They have to push forward some of those cases that are politically charged, if you will, for whatever reason. And so each time, those are constantly coming in. So each time a new case comes in, it pushes one down. And then maybe you go up a couple cases, then you get pushed down a case. So it is a process, and it takes a while for it to come through. Other than that, I really don't know too much about their entire setup and process and how long it takes.
As far as you, ma'am, it's got to be upsetting to hear what he just said. I mean, I get, and while I know that CSI isn't real, it still is an amazing thing that you have to wait 8 months, 9 months for a DNA test. I used to work in labs 25 years back, and I would do DNA work, and we could do it in 2 or 3 days. It wasn't the exact same thing, but it was close. How does that make you feel?
Well, probably 25 years ago, the population wasn't probably so big as it is right now in Peoria County, but, you know, that makes a difference, too, and crime has increased since that time. It's disheartening, especially when you can go in and get a blood test to determine parenthood of a child in less time, and it's quicker turnaround, you know, but they have a lab right there on site, so I don't know if that makes a difference or not. It makes a difference because if we are spending a lot of time and nothing's there, you know, to indicate that something did happen to her, then we have wasted, you know, time, and that's what we don't want to do, and that's why we're still searching, because we don't know that there's anything in that information, you know, and we don't know that there is. But in the meantime, we have to keep searching as if she is still here, because of the time frame. Now, if we had, like, proof that this, you know, this is a homicide, then, you know, things would change. The way we search, the information we look for, but since we don't have that, we have to keep searching as if she's still here. So while there's searches on the ground for her, there's also people out in the states here, not just Peoria, but throughout the United States here in the 50 states that are looking for her. You know, there are people out looking different areas, and I won't say that she would possibly be. So we're not technically waiting on the DNA test to come back. You know, it's good that they have samples. But is that just the end of the search? No, because as long as I believe she's here, I'm going to keep searching the places I think that she may have been taken to, moved to, or gone to. I don't know situation, so I can't say. But I have to keep searching. That includes where she was prior to, the places she's been over the last 2 years, those counties, those cities. That's where I'm focused.
All right. Well, I think that we are going to wrap this up. Thank you both very much. Are there any final thoughts, Mike, if someone happens to have a tip?
Yeah, they could call Crime Stoppers at 673-9000, or you could call the police department at 673-4521 and give that information to them. Obviously, the Alexis Scott Camry campaign Facebook page is a source as well. They can send tips into that, and they will certainly get forwarded off back to me. But, you know, we would encourage anybody with information or in reference to this case to send it forward to us, because, you know, sometimes we've heard the same thing over and over and over, but I would rather have that than nothing. And up to this date, we've still getting information in that we might have known about, didn't have specifics on. So any information that people think they have is important.
Yes.
Ma'am?
I agree.
And anything that you would like to add?
No, thank you for having me on, and thank you for inviting Bolin. I appreciate it.
I thank both of you guys. Well, folks, thanks very, very much, and that is it. Thanks.